The Lord be with you.
And with
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. As Jesus continued his journey to Jerusalem, he traveled through Samaria and Galilee. As he was entering a village, 10 lepers met him. They stood at a distance from him and raised their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And when he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." As they were going, they were cleansed. And one of them, realizing he had been healed, returned, glorifying God in a loud voice. And he fell at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. He was a Samaritan. Jesus said in reply, 10 were cleansed, were they not? Where are the other 9? Has none but this foreigner returned to give thanks to God?" Then he said to him, "Stand up and go. Your faith has saved you." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise
good, and so once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. And so once again, rise and shine, everybody. And so once again, welcome back. A little tiny thought for you here I'd like to share with you here this morning. You know, our readings today, they're all about the virtue of gratitude. But you will kindly forgive me this morning if I don't talk about gratitude. Okay, we'll talk about gratitude some other time. Thanksgiving's coming up real soon. We'll talk about gratitude then. But there's a message here that I really would like to share with you. And it's something that's helped me tremendously. It's just a little tiny thought. I've thought about it a lot. I've prayed about this a lot. And I find this to be really, really helpful. The idea that healing comes at the price of humility. That's my little thought for you here this morning. Healing comes at the price of humility. I've profited a lot from thinking about that. It's helped me tremendously. I want to try to share it with you here this morning. I hope you find it to be helpful as well. But think about that for just a moment. You realize that's true all across the board. That's true in the physical order of things. You ever stop to consider how much humility it takes for you to get well when you're sick, right? You first got to admit there's something wrong with you, and that you're not the way you ought to be, and then you got to go to somebody else. You got to go to a doctor, you got to go to a nurse, and you got to put your problem in their presence, and then you got to do what you're told. You got to eat the food that you're told and take the medicine that you're told and undergo the therapy that you're told and take the treatment that you're told. And you have to do this in the way that you're told for as long as you're told because you're told. It takes a decent measure of humility to go through all of that. Now, if you want to, you can stick to your guns. You can hang on to your pride, but you will remain sick. Healing comes at the price of humility. But you know, the real point I want to make here this morning is that that's true in the spiritual order. And you have to stop and realize, first of all, that that means that all of us are spiritually sick. The priest included. I'm right in the bucket with you. All of us are spiritually sick. And if you don't think you're spiritually sick, you know what that means? That means you are really bad off. Because there's nobody more sick than the person who doesn't even realize that they're not healthy. What does that mean, for example, you know, I say you're spiritually sick. What does that mean? You know what that really means? That means that your relationships are out of kilter. That's really ultimately what that means. So think about how it means that you're spiritually sick. Your relationships with one another are not what they're supposed to be, are they? I mean, our relationships with people in our homes are not what they're supposed to be. You know how it is, you go into somebody's home and like there's a veneer of peace, right? But the fact of the matter is, it's an armed truce. Anybody steps out of line, it's World War III, right? Not the way things are meant to be at all. And if that's not the case in your house, then God bless you. But I bet you things aren't the way they should be in your place of work or in where you go to school. Right? And if that's not the case, then I bet you anything, you look at the news, you listen to the news, you watch the news, and you're not at peace with your fellow man in the world. You divide the world up into your own mind, in two little groups. There's the good guys, who are like me, of course. And then there's the bad guys, and that's everybody else. And you think to yourself, gosh, if there were just more people like me and fewer people like you, oh, this world would be so much better a place. Do you realize that's sick? It's sick. Saints never thought that way. The saints didn't necessarily have it easy with everybody, right? They had enemies. But what did they do? They loved their enemies. It's a sign of spiritual illness to be in constant tension with the people who you live with. Another sign of spiritual illness, we are not at peace with ourselves. Now, this is really interesting. I find this fascinating, that the greatest punishment that our society can mete out to our worst criminals is to give them solitary confinement. You know what that means? That means they force them to sit with themselves and just revel in the pain of realizing you're not at peace with yourself as you ought to be. That's why we're constantly seeking distractions. You ever notice people are always plugging into something and they're always looking at a screen, always running off to some kind of entertainment, diversion, distraction, video game, whatever? Why is that the case? There's a horde of reasons, but down at the root of it, we are not at we're not who we ought to be, and we know it, and we're not at peace with ourselves. You know, the other day I'm pumping gas, and there's this video screen at the gas pump. And I get it. You know, they're trying to sell me something, right? But, I mean, you can't even have a moment of silence. And part of the reason, it's a societal, spiritual sickness. We're not at peace with ourselves, and that was never meant to be. You know what else is a sign of spiritual illness? If you're not at peace with God. I mean, none of us are. That's why it's so hard to keep the commandments. That's why you fail and you fail and you fail again. You're not at peace with God. That's why you look to tomorrow and you look to the future and you're filled with dread and worry and fear. That's why you look back to yesterday and it's nothing but regret and shame. And that's why you look around today and all you can see is problems, problems, problems. Saints were not like that. You know what it means to be at peace with God? See, the saints, they'd look to tomorrow, and they'd be at peace because the whole thing's covered by God's providence. It's going to be okay. Look back to yesterday, and they're at peace because it's all under God's mercy. And, you know, they live today in joy because the whole thing's God's gift. And our relationships are not what they're meant to be. That's what it means that we're spiritually sick. Now, you want to get well. Spiritual health comes at the price of humility. That's what we got to pray about. And that's what we find today. You find it in your first reading, especially you find it in the gospel. So let me quickly run through those for you. First reading comes from the second book of Kings, and you probably didn't understand the first reading. And that's okay. That's okay. Because the first reading tells you the end of a long story. And you can't possibly understand a story if all you hear is the ending. Okay, so let me tell you the rest of this story. First reading, second book of Kings. The time, it's about 850 BC, give or take. The place is northern Israel. There's two main characters in the first reading, okay? There's the prophet Elisha, and there's Naaman the Syrian. Okay, now the prophet Elisha, he's one of the greatest prophets in the Old Testament. He's the one that took over from the prophet Elijah, a man whose holiness was so great that his nickname was the Man of God. Just try to imagine what that would be like. Somebody who's so holy that you can just say the Man of God and everybody knows who you're talking about. That was the prophet Elisha. Okay. And then there's Naaman the Syrian. Naaman was the most powerful general in Syria. And this at a time in which Syria was the most powerful army in the world. Okay, so Naaman's one of the most powerful guys in the whole world. Think of Naaman as being like, say, General Douglas MacArthur in 1946. Okay, one of the most powerful people in the entire world. However, the crux of the story is that Naaman has leprosy, the most humiliating disease. Naaman's life is over. He's got leprosy. He's going to be banished from everybody he knows for the rest of his life. And what's Naaman going to do to overcome this terrible problem? He's going to find healing, okay? But it's going to cost him a lot of humility to get there. Here's the story. There was a little slave girl, a captured Israelite slave girl, who says to her mistress, I know a great prophet in Israel who can heal leprosy. It's Elisha the prophet. And the mistress tells Naaman, and Naaman tells the king. King says, gosh, what do you have to lose? Might as well go down to Israel and see if Elisha the prophet can help you. So Naaman gathers up this huge entourage, right? He travels like a head of state. He gets 10 silver talents and 6,000 gold pieces and 10 festal garments and 10 suits of armor and a letter from the king and horses and chariots and charioteers and entourage and retinue, travels like a head of state, and he goes down to Israel. Now, you think about the humility that led him to do that. He does this on the advice of a slave girl. I mean, can you imagine? That would be like, say, the CEO of a Fortune 500 company getting up and moving, like on the advice of a summer intern. You gotta be pretty desperate, okay? You gotta be pretty desperate. And he goes down to Israel. And they weren't, Syria wasn't at war with Israel, but they weren't exactly at peace either. So try to imagine what this would be like some four-star general in the Marine Corps. And he goes on his own, private little trip, say to China. You know, we're not exactly at peace, but we're not exactly at war either. What happens when he shows up in China? People say, well, what are you doing here? Are you spying on us? Well, what are you up to? A huge measure of humility that it would take to do this. So he gets up, goes down to Israel, he travels on foot, finally arrives, and he's finally come to the presence of the prophet Elisha, and Elisha won't even get up out of his tent to go and see Naaman after all that he's done. Won't even get up and see him. Instead, Elisha sends a stand-in. He sends a messenger to go to mighty Naaman and all of his retinue. And the messenger says to Naaman, oh, yes, yes, leprosy, leprosy, you have leprosy. Oh, yes, you see that river over there? Jordan River? Just go wash in the Jordan River and you'll be fine. And that's when Naaman says, I've had it, that's enough. I come all the way down here, make this great big trip, and Elisha won't even bother to come out and see me? And some stand-in has to tell me that I have to go wash in some river like there aren't better rivers back home? That's it. I give up. I'm going home. And that's when his servant speaks up and says, you know, Lord, if he'd told you to do something extraordinary, wouldn't you have done it? I mean, can't you just, you've come all this way, can't you do something ordinary? And so Naaman, he swallows his pride, gets up, goes and washes in the Jordan River, and that's where your first reading begins. And he gets out and he's absolutely cured. And how did he get cured? He was healed at the price of humility. Great, great lessons in that. Very similar lesson now you get here in the gospel with the story of the 10 lepers. Now you've heard this story before. 10 lepers, they approach Jesus and they cry out, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. Now you go back to the book of Leviticus and you find that it tells lepers are supposed to cry out whenever they see anybody come in near. They're supposed to cry out, unclean, unclean, ring a bell in front of them. And the idea was you were supposed to be able to stay so far away from any leper that you couldn't even get closer than shouting distance to them. That's because leprosy was actually greatly misunderstood. Leprosy is still misunderstood. You know, the disease actually exists today. It's called Hansen's disease. It's not really curable, but it's treatable. I was in actually a leper camp, and I learned a couple interesting things. Everybody thinks leprosy is really contagious. That's because most of what we know about leprosy we learned from the Bible, right? They thought leprosy was contagious. Turns out it's not. It's actually, you have to be genetically predisposed to get it, and only one person in 20 has the genetic predisposition, which means 19 people out of 20, no matter how much contact they have with a leper, will never get leprosy. But you know, they didn't know that. They thought this was highly contagious. And people think leprosy makes your fingers fall off and your toes fall off, and that's not true either. What leprosy does is it destroys your nerve endings. And then your fingers and your toes atrophy, and then when you injure them, you can't feel any pain, so then they get infected, and then that leads to amputation. And so people think that it doesn't make your fingers and toes fall off. But nonetheless, you had leprosy in the time of Jesus. You were banished instantly, taken away from all your family, all your friends, everyone you've ever known, set apart from in a camp for the rest of your life. You could never go back. And whenever you see anybody, you got to cry out, unclean, unclean. Is that what they cried out here in the gospel? Did they cry out, unclean, unclean? They did not. What they say? They said, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Now, just as an aside, what's really interesting there is the actual word that Luke uses when he says, have pity on us. You know what the lepers actually say in the original Greek text? They say, Jesus, Master, eleison me. Eleison. Where have we heard that word before? Eleison. Does that sound familiar to everybody? We said that every single time we say Mass. Eleison. You know what eleison means? It's Greek. It means three things. It means, have mercy on me, help me, and it also means, heal me and soothe my pain. All three. And that's, by the way, that's why I always start Mass by saying Kyrie eleison. Now you all know what it means. That's something you can say to God all the time, right? The root word there is eleos, the Greek word for oil. Soothe my pain and heal me. Have mercy on me and help me. That's what they cry out, hoping that Jesus will save them from this horrible disease. And does Jesus cure them? Yeah, but not right away. Why didn't he just cure them right on the spot? Wants to test their faith, and he wants to test their humility. He says to these lepers, the last thing they would ever expect to hear, he says, go show yourself to the priest. Now, that's the last thing you'd ever expect to hear. Because in Judaism, the priest would investigate a leper if he was healed to make sure he was all well. But you wouldn't go to the priest until after you were healed. You know what happens if you go to the priest before you're healed? Priest carried a bag of rocks, specifically a bag of rocks to throw at lepers if they got too close. That sounds really cruel, of course, but you know, that's just the way it was. So what kind of humility did it take for these guys, healed as they went? But before that, they're going to the priest, total humility, and that is where they find the healing. And that's my little message for you here this morning. Healing comes at the price of humility. Now you think about all the ways in which we need to be healed. It takes a tremendous amount of humility for you to, for example, listen to unjust criticism, right? Or to accept complaints, especially from people who don't know what they're talking about. It happens all the time. Terribly. It takes a tremendous amount of humility for you to reach out the olive branch of peace when there's been a dispute with somebody, especially when it's not even your own fault. Large measure of humility. It takes a lot of humility, brothers and sisters, to be patient. You want to know why we're all so impatient? It's because we all got a huge ego problem. That's why. Basically, impatience is like saying, give me my way now. Tremendous amount of humility that it takes. But that's where it's hard to go to somebody and say, I'm sorry, let's start over. That's where the healing comes from. In the spiritual order, it's exactly the same. It takes a great deal of humility to listen to the church, especially these days, right? Tremendous, but you can't forget this. In spite of all of our hardships and difficulties, we are still protected by a divine promise. The church will always teach Jesus' teaching with regard to faith and with regard to morality. But it's hard. It takes a lot of humility to sit down and pray every day. And you say, I don't even think I'm doing anything. I don't think this accomplishes anything. I tell you, healing comes at the price of humility. It takes a lot of humility to get to Mass, doesn't it? And not just some of the time, but every Sunday. And why? Because God commands it, and that's good enough for me. Not easy at all. It takes a lot of humility to kneel down and go to confession, and to believe that Jesus has given his own power to this frail priest, who's a sinner too, right? But that he's given them the power to forgive sins. Not easy at all. You know what takes the most humility of all, I think? It's the ability to look at this messed up world around us and then still to be able to turn to God in prayer and say, Lord, I still believe that you are all-powerful and that you are in charge of all things. But that's where the healings come from. Listen, think about that. Pray about that. It costs and it's not easy. If you're not at peace, it means that somewhere in your life, you're still holding on to ego. If you're not at peace, it means that somewhere in your life, you still haven't surrendered in humility. Pray about that. Think about that. Turn to the Lord with that. Because, you know, if you look to the world around you, you'll be distressed. If you look to yourself, you'll be depressed. But if you look to the Lord, you will be at rest. And that's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.